accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning, everyone. Is there anyone new here today? Well, welcome. Welcome, everyone. And the title of my talk is Practicing. Oh, let me tell you a little bit about myself. So my name is Carol Paul, and I entered practice in 1996 in the South Bay with Darlene Cohen, who's not with us any longer, but she gave me my rakusu, which is the bib that we wear. And my name is Shiken Seigetsu, and it means intention clear, serene moon. She said it was awakened moon, but later my priest that ordained me said serene moon, so my name changed a little bit. So I came to Berkeley, moved to Berkeley in 2002. I began practicing here. I found my home the minute I entered those gates. And in 2017, I was ordained as a priest by Sojin Mel Weitzman, who was the founder of this temple, who's no longer with us. And then in 2019, I became Shuso, which allows you to teach. And then in 2023, a couple years ago, I received Dharma transmission, which from Hozan, Alan Sanaki, who left us a year ago, passed away a year ago. So that's a little bit about me. Today, it's going to be a little bit of a more personal talk, because that's what I've been practicing with for the last month, or year, actually. The title of my talk is Practicing with Sudden Illness. And really, you can apply this to anything, whether you, because really the talk is about loss and letting go, which is pretty much what all my talks are about, my whole practice. And this loss or letting go can really be applied. For me, it was a loss of my old life, really. And, but you know, if you're having any loss, places where you need to let go, maybe a relationship or a job, maybe you're going through a divorce, any of the things, we're always having something that we have to let go of. And it can also be things like your beliefs. Maybe you're discovering, gee, these beliefs aren't working so well for me, those opinions I have. And we might have to reevaluate and let them go. So before I talk about my sudden illness, which happened last summer, I wanted to briefly talk about Dogen's teachings on the eight qualities of a great person. And it's also called the eight awarenesses of a bodhisattva, because these are the things that I was practicing and working with during this time of illness. So this is the book I use, and it's titled The Roots of Goodness. And this is Dogen Zenji's interpretation of the eight qualities. And the commentary is by Kosho Uchiyama Roshi. And the Saturday before my illness, I checked it out of the library. And I'm returning it today. A little overdue. Thank you, dear librarian. Just was some kind of an incidental thing that happened. So these qualities are something, well, I'll continue to work with. And they did help me through this time of illness. and I want to talk about my illness. But first, I want to talk about these qualities. And this teaching was the last teaching that Buddha gave just before his nirvana. And then, incidentally, it's the last teaching that Dogen gave. So we don't know whether Dogen related that to the Buddha or not. And sometimes these are in Japan, they're given to someone who's ready to die at their deathbed. Talk to him about that. So Buddha said that every person is capable of greatness by practicing these 8 key qualities in their life. That's pretty powerful. So, and Uchiyama, who I say did the commentary on this, another great teacher, said he talks about studying these and practicing these leads to you becoming an adult or a grown-up. The other day I heard on the radio that young people are going to have a hard time becoming adults because of AI. So I thought that was interesting. So I want to tell you what these 8 qualities of awareness are. First one is having few desires. Second is knowing one has enough. Knowing one has enough. I would say those 2 first ones are the ones that I'm mostly practicing with. The next is appreciating serenity and quietude. And the fourth is making diligent effort. And the next one is not losing sight of true dharma, so that's the teachings. Never losing sight of the teachings. 6 is concentrating on settling in jhana or zazen. And the next is practicing wisdom. And finally, not engaging in useless arguments. So, you know, you'll notice a lot of these are in some of our other lists that we have. We love lists. And so we kind of duplicate. And these, you know, there's 8 qualities here, but each one relates to every other one. So if you look at it, there would be like 64. So now I want to return to what happened to me. So this was last year at the end of June. We'd finished Sesshin, and I had this, out of nowhere, a cascade of events. And one thing led to the next thing, to the next, and so on, the way things do happen. So the first thing that happened was actually before a way-seeking mind talk on a Monday morning. And I would get terrible cramps in my legs and my feet. I got the worst cramps I think I'd ever had in my life. And so I had to jump out of bed really fast to see if I can, you know, settle them down. And I couldn't, so I was held onto the baseboard. But they were so strong that I just let go of the baseboard and fell down, which was about 1 foot. And I didn't really think anything of it. This never hurt, this fall. But my friends encouraged me to get an x-ray, which I did. And what the doctor found was I did have a fracture in my lower back and a fracture on my foot. And also, my sodium levels had dropped. I'd just gotten home, and he called and said, you need to come right in to the hospital because, you know, that's pretty dangerous because it affects your kidneys. And I had been really pretty fortunate in having good health, very active physically. And so this was, quite a surprise, not hospitalized. Except for, you know, when I was a teenager for tonsillitis and having a child. But those are minor things, really. And so for 2 days I was in the hospital, and they pumped me up with a lot of sodium so they could get my sodium levels up. So, well, that was just a lot of bloating, you know, just my body was full of fluids. And, you know, as I said, I'd never really been in the hospital that much, so I think maybe the second day I was really feeling cranky and angry and uncomfortable and just wanted out of there. And I thought to myself, so much for practice. All those years of zazen, and look, this is just, I'm just impatient. This is, you know, I was just so disappointed. And then I heard a woman down, or someone, I don't know whether it was a woman or a man, but down the hall, and they were moaning, and I could tell they were in a lot of agony. It was just filled with sorrow. It just, oh, it was, it just felt so bad. And, you know, of course, we know there's suffering in the world, and it's the first noble truth that we study. And it was just, I don't know, I just had this moment of compassion for that person. You know, she was in real pain. I was never in pain. And it just, you know, it's really a moment of waking up of my awareness. And this reminded me of the fifth quality of greatness, of not losing sight of true Dharma. Well, you know, I had lost sight. Being human, I had lost sight. But that compassion just stirred in me and woke me up. You know, Nagarjuna, who's one of our early great teachers, he said, among the teaching of all the Buddhas, showing compassion is most important. If there is neither compassion nor empathy, surely the person will die in short order. So compassion is something we're always working with in our Buddhist. And it does manifest itself. It's always there, I think, but, you know, it begins to manifest as the longer we practice. So after I was released, the next 5 weeks, I had a lot of discomfort. I had to wear kind of this full vest. I felt like I was on the SWAT team or something, because for my back for 8 weeks, and then I also had a foot brace. So, and a lot of edema, because they hadn't fixed that. My kidney levels, my salt level was up, sodium was up, but now I looked, I think I gained about 10 pounds. And I couldn't really walk that well, maybe 10 steps, and then I'd have to stop because I couldn't breathe, you know, because all that was right up at my heart. And really I had, what we discovered is I have heart failure and a leaky heart valve. So this was a real practice of testing my practice, my whole digestive system. You know, when you get sick, it affects every part of your body just because we're so interconnected and our bodies are that way too. So one threw off one part of my system, and so I really couldn't get too far away from home. And I had a lot of doctor appointments dealing with one thing or another. But, you know, despite that time, I was really able to experience appreciating this third quality, serenity and quietude. I was spending time in my garden, just appreciating being able to breathe and all the little things that we take for granted. and appreciating friends and food that they brought over. Just slowing down and appreciating that. So often I just don't take the time to do that. And so that was a time when nothing was required of me except to take care of myself, my body, and my mind. And I also was starting to look at, you know, well, having few desires. You know, what, and then number two is knowing one has enough. And that's a question I often ask, what is enough? Because there's always that desire for one more black top or, you know, one more movie. Those are the kind of things that I love. So these questions just arose. Well, what cravings and am I chasing? What am I longing for? You know, whether it's something material, as I say, like another black top, or physical. I couldn't, you know, I wanted to get back to my yoga and Zumba and swimming. And, you know, the mental attitudes, you know, just maybe more Dharma. Well, that's really more spiritual. So just looking at that, how does one know when has enough? And do these things really bring us peace? Does it really bring me peace? The more I have, it seems like it just opens up another opportunity for another desire. And it's not bad because we have desires. We need to have desires. But maybe sitting in the garden, just those small things, those desires can be just enough. And in the words of the Buddha, he said, "Monks, here is something you need to be aware of. A person with many longings or cravings suffers proportionately greater, precisely because he or she seeks greater personal gain or other benefit. When one pursues few desires, there will be less suffering and fewer troubles." So I thought that was, you know, that's really interesting. The more you have, the more you want, the more you got to get. We just stop and slow down, and maybe I don't need this new top or whatever it is. And so some of the things I started to really appreciate were, like, as they say, sitting in the garden, enjoying my friends. That was just enough, and not having pain. That was such a blessing, not to have pain. And, you know, just being able to walk, albeit 10 steps, and to being able to care for myself, just the things we take for granted, just enough. And a practice I still continue is when I take a walk, I just want to stop and think, you know, looking at the trees or the sky or the people that are coming by with their children or dogs, and just saying to myself, just this is enough. Just this is enough. So even if it's just a moment of just this is enough, it just reinforces that the more I do that. And also remembering too that I am enough. I am enough just as I am. Just who this person is. Trungpa Rinpoche, another great teacher, Tibetan teacher, he wrote a book called The Sacred Path of a Warrior. And he has a whole section on the basic goodness. As they say, this is the roots of goodness. That's how this title was. Because these qualities bring out our goodness in us. And he said, the first step in realizing basic goodness is simple appreciation of your life. Just this is enough, really. And this appreciation, it includes yourself and others. That's very important, others. When you don't, I'm just continuing his quote, when you don't punish or condemn yourself, when you relax more and appreciate your body and mind, you begin to contact the fundamental notion of basic goodness in yourself. So I'll read that again. When you don't punish or condemn yourself, when you relax more and appreciate your body and mind, you begin to contact the fundamental notion of basic goodness in yourself. And it continues on. Developing tenderness toward yourself allows you to see both your problems and your potential accurately. So in order to really get in touch with this goodness, we have to accept ourselves first so we can get in touch with our basic goodness. And finally, he says, that kind of gentleness and appreciation toward yourself is very necessary. It provides the ground for helping yourself and others. So I think we have to start with ourselves, appreciating ourselves so that we can extend that out to everyone. Now, during this period, I also had moments of jealousy and envy. You know, I saw my family and my friends. This is during the summer. They had all these trips planned, and they were going here and there, and I was planning all these trips. All paid trip, all paid for. And, you know, I felt diminished. That's how I felt. Like, well, poor me. Everybody's going off, and, you know, I had to have a little pity party for myself. Missing out, you know, I was missing out on everything. And then I remembered, no, wait. I have a whole and complete life. This life, what I'm leading right now, it lacks nothing. Nothing. I'm connected with everyone and everything, because we are, all our interconnections, so I can have sympathetic joy for everyone that's out doing other things that I thought I would be doing or wanted to do, because what I'm doing moment by moment is complete. It's a whole life. It may not sound like much, but it was a real shift for me. It just made me realize, yes, this is, we have that. The more present we are, regardless of what we're doing, it is a complete and whole life. And, you know, then I really felt appreciation for my life and appreciation for what other people were doing. You know, kind of that sympathetic joy. And I'm remembering, well, just this life, my life, is just enough. This is the life that I'm to be doing now. And it is just enough. You know, and I had to slow down. You know, these kind of things do require us to slow down and take them in. And that's hard in our culture. There's so many things out there, those desires, wanting to do this and that. And it's very hard to know what is enough. What is opening the cavity of more desires? And as I say, they're not bad desires. It's just knowing what is enough. So, you know, this is, of course, one of the great benefits of Zazen, which is one of the qualities, sitting in jhana or Zazen, because there we do slow down, remembering just this is enough, just our breath is enough, one breath and then the next breath, and just watching the mind go by, whether it be fast or slow. And by doing that, we really become aware of our whole self, our whole life. You know, I often call this jokingly, this is my sudden enlightenment. You know, we have sudden enlightenment or gradual. And in our tradition, sudden is like you have an aha moment or something. You wake up. Gradual, which I think more I practice, you know, it's a step-by-step thing, a gradual awakening, awareness. But for me, you know, my life had really changed from one way to this way, just in instant, one day to the next day. I had to give up a lot of things that I'd done. And I had to adapt to a new diet, new medications, new exercise, what I could and couldn't do. So everything had to be modified, which was challenging because, it had a very active life, very, very few illnesses, nothing serious. And, of course, all these things are going to happen to us. But in old age, we kind of think they'll just sort of gradually happen. And but sometimes it doesn't happen that way. So I felt myself, I was kind of like a liminal state. You know, the old life was no longer there, but I hadn't really emerged into this new life, what my new life would be. And, you know, so it's that practice of just not knowing what this new life would be. And really, we practice with not knowing all the time because we think we know, but we really don't know from moment to moment. So the practice of the sixth quality, concentrating on settling in jhana, as I said, is always helpful. Just, I couldn't really sit for a while because my body was so agitated. But once I was able to begin sitting again, I could just rest in that quiet sitting position. Even if my mind was racing, if the body's sitting, that's one part that's just resting. So now at the end of the 5 weeks, I returned to the hospital for 6 days. They're still trying to reduce the fluids. And I hadn't really seen my cardiologist. I had talked to him, but he hadn't seen what I looked like. So finally, I got my appointment, and I really didn't know how to care for myself, you know, to advocate. But when I finally got to see him, he was shocked. He said, "Oh, you're going in the hospital right now, right this very minute." And he did. He actually walked me down the hall. Well, that was a shock. But at least for 11 days, and I told him, I don't want to leave this hospital until this edema is gone, and, you know, things happen. They had to regulate a lot of different things while I was there. And during that time, my sister-in-law died. And this is a person I went to school with. We were in grammar school together, high school. We're the same age. And she had cardiac issues. She was very private, though. I didn't know how serious they were. But she died in her sleep. And this put my family really in kind of on high alert for me, like, oh, God, Carol's next. It's going to happen to her. And it took me a while to really take that in. Because like I say, I didn't feel bad. The medications were working. But finally I realized, well, yeah, I could die, just as all of us could die. But I could have a cardiac event. And so I thought about, well, am I ready to die? Could I die? And so I thought to myself, is there anyone I need to forgive who I think may have hurt me or ignored or insulted me in some way, and I was still holding that? And do I need to forgive? Really, it's really forgiving myself for what I thought was a wrongdoing. And then I thought, the second thing was, well, is there anyone I need to ask forgiveness for? Maybe something I've done that I've maybe hurt them. And this also includes myself. Do I need to forgive myself? Some areas where I still haven't forgiven myself for things I've done. And finally, is there anything left unsaid? Is there anyone like my family or my friends that I haven't said something? Maybe it's to thank them or how much they mean to me or that I love them. That I would just be remiss in not telling them that. So I was scanning over my life this way, and nothing stood out. I know there are things, and they, I hope they do come out so that I can make these amends. But I thought, well, I guess it would be okay to die. Of course, it's easy to say. We never know how it will be at the time of death. But I didn't feel agitated or anxious. Just sad about my sister-in-law. Ooh, okay. So I want to reread the eight qualities. So you might want to take one and practice with it. So again, having few desires. Really study that one. What does that mean? What are my desires? Can I let some of them go? Are they really encouraging peace? And the second one is knowing one has enough. These really kind of, they work together for me. Knowing one has enough. What is enough? What is enough? So it's a good practice for me, just as I say, just wherever I am, just this is enough. And maybe even into agitation, just this is enough. And the next is appreciation of serenity and quietude. I love that one. So I like just the quiet and serenity of just being. So it requires a lot of things, turning off the TV and the radio and all of the media and just being. And making diligent effort. I do that through, for everything, just whatever we do, just do it wholeheartedly for its own sake, for no gain. It's just making diligent effort. That's living a whole, complete life. And number five, not losing sight of true Dharma. So not losing sight of our teachings. And of course, we do that by enforcing them, coming here, being in a group. And of course, the next one, concentrating on settling in jhana. That's how we reinforce that true Dharma, that sitting in zazen. Someone asked me this morning, what do you like best about practice? And I mean, the thing that came to me was zazen. You know, because you can just go to that cushion and settle, or chair, whatever, and just settle the mind, just whatever's going on. Oh. And seven, practicing wisdom. I think wisdom just comes as we practice. Our discernment becomes a little sharper. As we clear out, you know, old ideas and beliefs and systems, we can see reality just really what it is. And finally, not engaging in useless argument. And that's another thing to study too. Well, what is useless argument? Or one of our lists says not engaging in, well, I say chit-chat, but it's not that. It's haphazard talk, yeah. So it's it's kind of like that. And that's something I have to practice. Well, I have to practice with all of them. So maybe there's one that you can work with, and I'm returning it today. So I'm going to conclude by by saying thank you, and you're thinking, well, I don't even know her. I've never met her, or I didn't even know she was ill, because I didn't really broadcast it. Kind of a private person, I guess, that way. But just you being part of this Sangha, I felt that energy. I felt it when my husband died, and I felt it again. So you make a difference just by being here, your energy, the positive, your positive intentions to wake up. So all way across from the bridge, I live in the North Bay, I could feel it, and it supported me during my year of absence. Oh, I was able to return after 5 months. But so thank you. So I think we probably have time for comments, questions. Mm-hmm. Ellen.
Well, thank you, Carol. And I also... I wanted to say that I did visit you in the hospital, and I actually thought you were a complete saint. So
I haven't received the canonization, though, yet.
And this may be a very related question, actually, but very early on, when you started talking about the eight qualities, you said something about becoming a great person. And I was, you know, there's so many ways that that word great can be used in our culture. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about what that meant to you, what that means to you.
Well, I think it's kind of letting these things shine through, like our compassion, our kindness. Just stripping away these old things that really aren't working. So it's not great like famous or that kind of great. It's just living the life of a bodhisattva, living the life on the path of wanting to wake up, even just for a moment, just being fully present and aware.
Yeah, it's just sort of a funny word.
I know it is funny that he
and you had some other words, but I just wondered.
That's
anyway.
Yeah. That's how they. That's how. That's how.
Yeah.
He saw
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
They saw it. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I would say I think you're a great person.
You are too. We all are.
There might be questions online, too. I'll just bring this a little closer.
Oh, okay. I think Mary has
a question. Mary will be calling on them, yeah.
Thank you, Carol. It's so good to see you and have you present. And thank you for the notes to self about the to-do list as one's letting go of, and the, you know, the forgiveness list and so forth. I also wanted to say how grateful I am that I can even contemplate the question of what is enough, and that just by being all of us here, that we have enough to be able to be here and practice. I've been studying the six perfections, and the first one is generosity. And I've learned that there are three gifts that we can give: material gifts, teaching, and fearlessness. And the first one of material gifts is that you need to have enough food and shelter and clothes and so forth to be able to make use of the second and third gifts. So I just wanted to bring that into the room, that we have some gratitude and that we can even ask the question. So I guess that's not a question, but feel free to say.
Yeah, that is so true. That is so true, that we are so fortunate, whether how much, I'm not talking about we have a lot of money, but just fortunate to be here on the planet right now in this place. That feels somewhat safe now.
I think we should.
And then Shorey after that. Hi.
Thank you very much for your talk, Carol, and for your beautiful embodiment of your subject, which I'm very moved by. And just an aside, I wonder if a word for great that comes to mind as I listen to you is noble. A noble life.
A noble life. How would you describe that? What is it for you, a noble life?
Well, I think it's what you're describing. I think it's a person who's moving in the world in the practice with a sense of openness and generosity and uprightness, of taking care of things as they come up and not expecting things, but responding.
Well, you're a great example for me.
I have a question, and I was very struck by you talking about what's enough. And you talked about just this next breath is enough. And I can certainly understand, particularly as out of breath as you were at different times in your illness, that the next breath really was enough. Mm. And it was striking to me as you said that, that the police sirens were going by.
Really?
And it relates a little bit to what Mary was pointing at. I don't know what's enough right now. Wow. So much is happening around that has magnified the depth of vulnerability of people here, and the numbers of folks and basic assumptions about what our lives have been about that are at risk. Yeah. So I'm wondering how you think about what's enough in a time like this, when people sometimes, I don't feel like I can possibly do enough.
I don't think we can ever feel we can do enough, because there's always more to do. So how do we find satisfaction and, okay, this is what I did today. It's just enough for today. And tomorrow I start again and see what I can do. These are challenging times. I am so grateful for this practice because it supports us through this challenging time and can be examples and let our goodness shine through, as difficult as that is. Right now, I have a friend staying with me, and he's a Republican. And I just haven't really been able to have the full talk about what that is for him. And I have a lot to learn to know how to talk to the other side, people that don't feel the same way I do. That probably is one of the root causes. If we could just talk to each other and hear another point of view. Oh, might not agree with it, but there's more, probably a lot more than we think it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Thank you for your wonderful talk this morning, and it's really good to see you in that seat. I was really struck by sort of two things in your talk. You talked a bit about your practice of just this is enough and how that, you said it reinforces something. And then you shared that moment where you heard the other person moaning in pain and how that kind of woke you up from your own dissatisfaction of your, you know, that own feeling of, oh, I don't have enough right now because I want more, I want to be able to move, I want to be healthy, all those things. I often can get stuck in that place of, oh, I don't have enough right now. And I was curious that the practice you shared to sort of reinforce made me think of practices where we maybe get to a place where we don't have things arise, unwholesome things arise, because we've practiced. But when we are caught in them, did you have any other moments where you felt caught and maybe a practice or something that helped you even notice that you were caught, or and then maybe what it was like to get out of that stuck place?
Yeah, well, I probably had a lot of pity parties. What I say by a pity party is like, poor me, you know, oh, here I am stuck. But the next moment it just shifted so quickly. It can swiftly change from bad to what I was labeling bad to good. And that kind of happened all the time. If I was out of breath, just getting to a chair and sitting down was just enough. So I think there were a lot of moments of back and forth. Hard. Okay, now this is good. Just taking, this is plenty. And then, why me? So, that's kind of our life, though, I think, often. We don't stay in the same place.
Sounds like you're trusting impermanence.
Trusting in the practice, really. I just always come back to the practice and, okay, the Dharma is, you know, there's just so much in the Dharma that teaches us how to be an upright person. Oh, thank you, Sheree.
Carol, do you see anyone online?
I don't think so.
Mary Beth will probably speak up if there is.
Yeah, she'd help us. I don't think so.
I hope that I have. had this turned off before. I hope that we can hear them if we need to.
I don't think anybody has their hand raised, though.
Maybe I have this done. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I had seen a few hands. Do you want to tell me who?
I didn't notice, so you do it.
Okay. I saw Jim first.
Go on. Gary, do we still have time? We have time, right?
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Jim.
Can you hear
Welcome
me?
Back.
Thank you. Like this. Okay. It's so good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I saw you briefly in passing over the summer, and I could tell that you were still in the midst of what you've just shared with us.
Yes.
And that when you walked in today, I could see this renewed energy, and it's so, it's touched me.
Thank you.
As you and various people were talking about the title, great person or great man, it occurred to me that in contemporary Japanese, those same characters, if they are the characters that Dogen used, also mean adult. And as I thought about that, I went through the eight characteristics that you shared, and to me, I'm curious what you think about just positing that this is what it means to be an adult in the world, that we take responsibility, and that seeing that things are enough is a form of taking responsibility. And that's all I have to say. I'm curious how that resonates with you.
I think that's so true. And Uchiyama talks a lot about that. The middle word, dainen, yeah, the teaching. I don't have it right in front of me. Growing up, an adult, taking responsibility, and remembering we're all connected, you know, that most people don't think that way, but we know it's true. And being an adult is remembering we're not doing this by ourselves, and there's just, so many things to look at and change, you know, like if, particularly our beliefs, for me, beliefs and values and, you know, we call them behavior, old behavior patterns. So an adult really looks at that and takes it seriously and makes effort to see another way. An adult helps other people. You know, knows that we're not alone. Would you like to add anything for as an adult?
I think we can always come back and try to be adult again. I'm not always an adult, I know. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we have to have our hissy fits.
Carol, thank you for your talk. I'm encouraged by your physical recovery, and I heard spiritual recovery inside of while you were in the hospital. And thank you for that. We've all experienced death in our lives, and you brought up death quite a lot. So the little kid inside of me playfully wants to ask you this question. Do Buddhas die?
Physically, yes. Their body does, but not their spirit. It just keeps going. That's what I think. That's my belief. It's that energy is still out there. What do they say? You know, nothing leaves this energy, or nothing leaves this universe. It's all contained. So it's still that support is out there. That's my thought. Do you have a thought about that?
I'm going to remain teachable and just observe the light traveling through the room. And I don't see anything. I don't see the light dying or the sound, or the earth, wind, fire, and water. So thank you for your wisdom.
You know, really, all you have to do is walk in this temple. There's a lot of ancestors that have sat here our great teachers. I had that feeling in Tassajara too. Just walking that temple, it's like, whoa. But that energy is floating around there. It's okay, maybe, just to believe that. It supports me. I think that's, thank you again. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken with them. Delusions are inexhaustible.